Hello and welcome to the first episode of What a Fab Day. I am your host, Simon Mas. If you don't recall the introduction or you haven't listened to it, this is a podcast about the Beatles and their story, focusing on the events of any single day throughout the years, from the days of the Quarrymen to the final demise of the band. Today, we will focus on what happened on the 1st of January of each and every year, and we already have quite a key moment in the history of the Fabs. Any guess on what it might be? Anyway, since for some events it was not possible to find an exact date, this, and any first of the month episode, will also cover events happened throughout the month. This is the case with the first entry of today's show. At some point in January 1958, the membership of the Quarrymen became somewhat stable. Previously, the band had seen a number of members coming and going, but with the passing of time, the kids had started to grow, and most of them began to leave to find full-time employment. By the end of the month, the group included only five members: Len Gary on the T-chest bass, Eric Griffiths on guitar, Colin Hanton on drums, John Lennon on guitar and voice, and Paul McCartney on guitar and voice. They were sometimes supplemented by John Lowe, nicknamed Duff, on piano, but Lowe was never considered to be a full member of the band, whatever that might entail in a teenage skiffle band. Let's move on 1 year to the 1st of January 1959. It was on this day that the Quarrymen performed at the Wilson Hall in Liverpool for a late Christmas party for the Speak Bus Depot Social Club. The gig had been arranged through Harry Harrison, George's father, who was the club's chairman. For the gig, the Quarrymen featured George Harrison, John Lennon, and Paul McCartney on guitar and voice, and for the last time, Colin Hanton on drums. According to Hanton, as reported in Philip Norman's book Shout, the band was really good in the first half of the engagement. The lads played six songs, and the crowd was happy and cheering. In the interval, news came to them that the manager of the Pavilion Cinema was in the crowd, and he was considering booking the band. They were ecstatic. They had a couple of pints, or maybe more, and got a bit merry. Needless to say, the second half of the gig was terrible. Naturally, there was no talk of Pavilion Cinema booking, and a furious row erupted on the bus going home. Hanton was so mad that he left the band there and there, vowing never to play with them anymore. He carried off his drums and left the bus, despite not being at his stop, and he walked out of this story for good. January 1960 saw the Quarrymen acquiring a new member, Stuart Sutcliffe, nicknamed Stu. Sutcliffe was a painter and John Lennon's coursemate and dear friend from the art college. He had come to acquire the whopping sum of £65, about £1,500 in 2020 money, selling one of his paintings at an exhibition. Not bad at all for a student. Encouraged by a very insistent John Lennon, Stuart decided to spend the money on an Ofner President bass guitar, joining the band despite not being able to play. John probably promised him a bohemian life of music, artistry, women, and money to make his friends take such an inconsiderate step. But the Quarrymen needed a bass player, and Lennon was happy with Stu filling the role. The story goes that Sutcliffe never became a good bass player, never progressing beyond the basics and often performing with his back to the audience to hide his mistakes. On the other hand, some of the Hamburg friends of the band have commented that Stu was not nearly as terrible as normally thought. He might have been no match to a Paul McCartney, but he wasn't as bad as other amateurish bass players. Because let's face it, the Quarrymen were little more than that at the time. Talking about Paul McCartney, it was at some point in January 1961 that he decided to pick up the bass. the Beatles had lost Chas Newby, a lad that had momentarily filled the role for the Christmas bookings. With the holidays over, Newby had to go back to his university studies. John Lennon tried to convince George Harrison to pick up the instrument, but George refused, and so Paul decided to be the one making the switch. Also, from January 1961, drummer Pete Best and his mother Mona started to be trusted more and more with the task of finding engagements for the band. Pete's father was a boxer promoter of some importance in Liverpool, and the lads really didn't want to have anything more to do with Alan Williams, their former de facto manager. The absence of any written contract between Williams and the band, or any of its members for that matter, somewhat facilitated the switch. But the fairing wasn't all smooth, as we will see further down the line. Anyhow, the Beatles became more and more in demand, with the band starting to play two or even three concerts per day to accommodate all the requests. On the 1st of January 1962, the Beatles, with Pete Best on drums, had their audition at the Decca Studios at 165 Broadhurst Gardens, London. Needless to say, this was a huge deal for the band, a moment they had dreamt about for a very long time. The lads arrived to the studios just before the 11 a.m. start, after an adventurous 10-hour journey in a van through the snowy roads of a cold English winter. The road manager Neil Aspinall even lost the way around Wolverhampton, making them fear the worst, but they still managed to arrive on time. Manager Brian Epstein was also present to the audition, having travelled to London by train. Finally, the only one late to the party was Mike Smith, the Decca artist and repertoire assistant, who arranged for the audition after seeing the band live at the Cavern Club in Liverpool on the 13th of December 1961. The lads were not pleased with the delay, and they were even less so when Smith, appalled at the sight of their battered amplifiers, further postponed the start of the recording session to convince the Beatles to use the unfamiliar studio equipment instead of their own. For the audition, the Beatles recorded 15 songs, chosen by Epstein to outline their versatility. In order, according to Mark Lewisohn's The Complete Beatles Chronicle, they were Like Dreamers Do, Money, That's What I Want, Till There Was You, The Sheik of Araby, To Know Her Is To Love Her, Take Good Care of My Baby, Memphis, Tennessee, Sure to Fall in Love with You, Hello Little Girl, Three Cool Cats, Crying, Waiting, Hoping, Love of the Loved, September in the Rain, Besame Mucho, and Searching. Please note that the BeatlesBible.com website has a different song order, but I don't know what their source is, and so I am sticking to Lewisohn's. The only Lennon-McCartney originals were Like Dreamers Do, Hello Little Girl, and Love of the Loved. The recordings were probably all live in studio, all in one go, as if it was a live performance. 1 hour, and the ordeal was over. Mike Smith seemed pleased enough with the results, and the Beatles returned to Liverpool with Epstein, confident that Decca would offer them a record deal. Fun fact! The Decca studios were less than 2 minutes from the EMI's Abbey Road facilities that became a second home to the band in the next few years. In mid-January 1962, Horst Fascher, the former bouncer at the Kaiser Keller and Top Ten Club in Hamburg, West Germany, arrived in Liverpool. He didn't forget to pay a visit to the Beatles. Not only he was a good friend of the lads, but he had come to England on his new capacity. Fascher was to supply English bands for the exclusive Star Club in Hamburg, owned by Manfred Weisleder. Fascher booked the Beatles for a spring 1962 residence, offering what Epstein demanded. 500 Deutschmark per man per night, £44.50 then, and about £955 in 2020 money, plus a one-off under-the-table fee of 1,000 Deutschmarks, £89 then, and about £1,900 in 2020 money. On the 1st of January 1963, the Beatles, having completed their Christmas residence contract at the Star Club in Hamburg, flew back to London. The 1st of January 1964, instead, marked the seventh night of the Beatles' Christmas special at the Astoria Cinema in London. Since today's episode is so rich, I guess we will have to cover all the details about the Christmas special further down the line. But for now, it suffices to say that it was a variety show with music and comedy sketches, featuring the Beatles, other bands, and various comedians and showbiz personalities, put together by Brian Epstein. The first act on stage today was the Baron Knights and Duke de Monde. Then, Tommy Quickly and the Foremost had their quick sets, with Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas closing the first half of the two daily shows. After the interval, the public was treated with more music from the Baron Knights and Duke de Monde, followed by Cilla Black and Rolf Harris. The Beatles closed the shows with their 25-minute performances of Roll Over Beethoven, All of My Loving, This Boy, I Wanna Be Your Man, She Loves You, Till There Was You, I Want to Hold Your Hand, Money, That's What I Want, and Twist and Shout. By the mid to late January 1964, after I Want to Hold Your Hand became number one in their national singles sales charts, the American press joined the British media in the quest for Beatles coverage. To find out more about the band and interview the Fab Four, top American journalists flew to Paris, where the Beatles were having a three-week residency at the Olympia. The attention was not confined to the media front. Roughly at the same time, Brian Epstein received the visit of Norman Wace, a New York theatrical agent working for General Artist Corporation. Wace convinced Epstein to allow his bosses to book an engagement for the Beatles at the Carnegie Hall for the 12th of February 1964. Subsequently, another concert was added for the 11th of February in Washington, D.C. The total fee for the two shows was $7,000, about $58,500 in 2020 money. 1st of January 1965, the Beatles featured in the daily production of another Beatles Christmas show at the Hammersmith Odeon Cinema in London. Again, we will talk about the details of the production later on in the podcast, but basically, it was a new version of the 1964 variety show. In today's two houses, also featuring Freddie and the Dreamers, Sound Incorporated, Elkie Brooks, The Yardbirds, Michael Haslam, The Mike Cotton Sound, and Ray Fell, the Beatles appeared in two comedy sketches, one with Freddie Garrity of Freddie and the Dreamers, and another with the production's compere, Jimmy Savile. As usual, they closed the shows with an 11-song set. Twist and Shout, I'm a Loser, Babies in Black, Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby, Can't Buy Me Love, Honey Don't, I Feel Fine, She's a Woman, A Hard Day's Night, Rock and Roll Music, and Long Tall Sally. Also on this date, Radio Luxembourg started a weekly series dedicated to the band, aptly called The Beatles. It was broadcast every Sunday until the 17th of October 1965, from 8:45 to 9 p.m. The series only featured brief snippets of interviews that the Fabs had given to host Chris Denning, focusing more on spinning their releases and on the comments from the fans. For the last entry in today's episode, let's move to early January 1967, when Swedish TV director Peter Goldman arrived in London. Goldman was hired by the Beatles to direct the promotional clips for their next double single, Strawberry Fields Forever, Penny Lane. In the early days of January, he visited the band in Abbey Road and scouted several locations in and around London. He selected Knole Park in Kent, some 20 miles southeast of the city, and Angel Lane in the East End as ideal for the shootings. Well, that's all for today's episode. It was a lengthy one, and I can't promise to have so much to tell on every episode, but I will try to give you something interesting every time. If you like this episode and want to support me and my efforts, please consider visiting www.simonmas.com/support to find out what you can do. Keep in mind that on my website you can also find a form to contact me if you have ideas and constructive criticism. If I can, I will be happy to take on suggestions. If I set everything up correctly, you should also have an Amazon affiliate link in the description of the podcast, useful if you want to investigate the sources I used to create What a Fab Day. If the shopping demon gets you, follow the link and Amazon will give me some pennies of their money for your purchases. For the moment, I wish you a good day and a fab continuation.
Simon Mas, music you love.